Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. We're going to talk about a topic that I have been talking to you about for a long time, actually since the beginning. Since the very early days of my show, I was talking to you about intellectual property and all the different aspects of intellectual property, which includes something like that you know of as patents, which includes something like copyrights, which includes registration, registering a name, registering a trademark. But it also includes trade secrets. Intellectual property doesn't have to be, you don't have to do anything with it except protect it and cause it to be a trade secret where nobody else has it, like the Coca-Cola recipe, all that sort of thing. And so that's the reason why whenever I have an opportunity to have someone on the show like Henry Hines, I always like to do that. Henry is a chemical engineer. He's a patent attorney. He's a partner in the law firm of Townsend, Townsend and Crew, based out of San Francisco. And he's been advising large and small businesses about the importance of their intellectual property for a long time. His second book, at least the second one that I know of, is just out now called Patents for Business. He's our new friend. Henry, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me on your show.
It's good to have you here, and thank you for the book. It's outstanding.
Great. Glad to hear it.
Henry, as you heard me say, I've been telling small business owners that we've got to understand that we're creating that. Well, here's how I said it earlier before you got here. All small businesses aren't prospects for creating patents, but all small businesses create and have and own and leverage intellectual property. What do you think?
That's absolutely true. And one of the things that this book focuses on is due diligence, which is a close study of the corporation's entire patent portfolio, in most cases by another corporation, with the consent of the first corporation. And that's the kind of investigation that precedes a number of different types of corporate transactions and fundraising and investments. And it's very important that the corporation be ready for due diligence and know the kinds of questions that are going to be asked about its patent portfolio and be ready with answers.
Well, when you put a little bit of a different spin on due diligence from what we typically think of it here. I've explained due diligence and to my audience, and of course many of them know what it means, in with regard to the securities industry. We spent a fair amount of time over the years talking about the importance of due diligence, the critical aspect of due diligence in the process of buying a business, or in the process of selling a business, in the process of evaluating securities, that sort of thing. As you know, as you correctly pointed out in your book, the term due diligence actually arose out of the 1930 Securities Acts.
That's right.
And so, it's interesting to me. I don't think I've ever seen anyone use the concept of due diligence around intellectual property the way you have.
Well, intellectual property due diligence is actually a subset of general due diligence, and there are many transactions where the due diligence itself is intellectual property and primarily or only intellectual property. These are the transactions that involve a particular product line, a particular process, some proprietary technology of the company itself, focused on the technology. And the technology, of course, is at the heart of the value of the company and the value of the transaction. So this could have to do with collaborations between companies for purposes such as manufacturing collaborations, distributing partnerships, marketing partnerships, that kind of thing. And many institutional investors or venture capitalists, when they make major investments in a company, they want to check out their intellectual property to make sure that the value of the transaction is what they thought it was when they got into this.
So are you saying that if we're looking for venture capital, maybe part of the due diligence that we would want to provide to those venture capitalists is an outside evaluation of our intellectual property?
Well, the venture capitalist itself will hire an attorney to perform due diligence on the company. And that attorney will be approaching the company and speaking to the business professionals. And
so you're not saying do it in advance of this. You're saying go ahead and let the venture capitalists do that.
Go ahead and let the venture capitalists do that, but know in advance what the venture capitalists are going to ask so
right.
that the investment is not derailed before it gets going. If there is a weakness out there, if there is a vulnerability in the intellectual property coverage or in any intellectual property issues, then it's best that the corporation and the officers and directors in the corporation know that before the venture capitalists or the major corporations that are looking for mergers or acquisitions or for any kind of investment in the company, before they point that out and find it.
Right. You don't want the person you're negotiating with to be the first one to know about your weaknesses.
That's absolutely right. You want to be able to find them out early on, patch them up or shore them up as necessary, address them and do what needs to be done.
Which brings me back to my point. Shouldn't you actually do this yourself first?
Well, I think that in some sense you should. You're going to investigate the same issues and be mm-hmm. constantly aware. So it's something.
Don't be naive about your weaknesses, is what you're saying. Don't be in denial about your weaknesses. If you have them, they will be exposed.
That's right, because somebody will find them.
Right. Exactly.
Absolutely.
With regard to intellectual property, are you familiar with a guy named Kenneth Crozen, a tax attorney out of Washington, D.C., named Kenneth Crozen? Kenneth did a study, and he determined that the leveraging of assets has basically inverted over the last 30 years. And I'm sure you agree with this, and you may have done some work on this yourself, where corporations are more likely to be leveraging 80% intellectual property, 20% fixed assets today, whereas 30 years ago it would have been the reverse of that.
Well, that's entirely believable, and I think that you can find examples of that today, large corporations and small corporations.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, when I do speeches around the country, one of the things I do is ask small business owners these questions. And every year I get more people telling me that that's their case. Not 80-20 maybe, but at least more intellectual property today than in the past. And I want to talk about this a little bit more with Henry Hines, ladies and gentlemen. He and I will be right back. We got more stuff to come with regard to your intellectual capital. We're going to focus really on small business issues specifically right after these messages. His new book is called Patents for Business. Stay with us.
This is your big debut. It's like a dream come true.
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Thank you very much for using it to your advantage. And as you know, there's no barrier to entry. All you got to do is show up, and we'll let you in. You can use all of our stuff there. And don't forget, by the way, to subscribe to my free newsletter, which comes by email on Sunday, and check out our blog, which is updated every weekday, and you can come and get it, or we'll send it to you. Patents for Business, ladies and gentlemen, is the name of the book. By M. Henry Hines, the author, The Manager's Guide to Scope, Strategy, and Due Diligence. And Henry, one of the things that, by the way, tell us where your book's available and give us your website too, please.
Well, the book is available through Prager Publishers. It's available right now. And it's also available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and any number of book vendors on the Internet.
Right. So basically, wherever books are sold, folks, and just remember the title, Patents for Business, or Henry Hines, the author. Henry, one of the things that I like to do is point out the reality that most small business owners are going to say, you know what, I'm not an inventor. I'm running a business here. And so, and I say fair enough, but there are those small business owners who think they have things that are patentable, or they're inventors who then become business owners around what they've invented. But most small business owners, if we're going to get them to realize that, as you pointed out in your book, the real value of intellectual property is in patents most of the time, not always. Sometimes copyrights are, sometimes other registrations are. But the real value is in patents. But to get most small business owners to ultimately, say, have a patent, is for them to start out with some of the other easier intellectual properties, like registering a trade name or copywriting something. What do you think about that?
I think that's absolutely true. What small businesses need to do is get comfortable with the concept of intellectual property, of protecting their proprietary names, their proprietary technology, their proprietary processes and products. And when you come to patents, those are the ones that tend to generate the most revenue, they tend to be the most valuable, and they tend to be most easily leveraged in corporate transactions. So they're pretty important to have.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of patents, what is patentable? Now, that's one of the big subjects in your book. What is patentable?
Yeah, the answer to that is wow. Like, well, it isn't patentable, is it? everything from compositions of matter to all kinds of methods of use, methods of manufacture, new combinations of old materials, new combinations of old components, methods of use in new environments, even methods of purification, waste management methods, even methods of doing business are patentable. Accounting methods, methods.
Most of the things
inventory.
You just mentioned aren't anything that you can hold in your hand.
Well, but so many things are things that you can hold in your hand.
When you talk about methods, though, when you talk about systems and processes, those are ways of doing things. Those aren't things.
That's right. And they're also very valuable as far as intellectual property. They can be very highly leveraged. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, if you think of that recent enormous settlement that came out from the jury verdict against Genentech for $1.53 million or something like that, that came out just last week or so.
What was that for?
That was for a process patent. Mm-hmm. That's actually a method. And they've got that thing licensed out. You talk about the value of these things. Their projected revenue for the year 2007 alone on that patent was $120 million. And that's
wow.
No small piece of change.
That's right. Well, let me ask you a question. At what point in time should the decision be made to patent, to take something from a trade secret to a patent? What is the deciding factor in that decision?
Well, trade secrets are very easily lost, either inadvertently or by theft, and patents are stronger in that regard. They're also you can get patents worldwide, so the scope of coverage is the geographical scope is much broader, and the scope of the subject matter of a patent can be broader because it can be whatever you define it as. You can take an invention and get down to the bare roots of it and scope it out broad enough so that it covers all the implications and all the possible applications of that invention. And,
but because of what it costs to protect a patent, doesn't the financial reward, the financial potential of a patent need to be significant to justify what you're going to have to do to protect it?
Well, I think it's money well spent, and the costs are really primarily up front. So if it costs anywhere from, say, $5,000 to $30,000 to get a patent through the patent office, to get a patent application drafted and filed and allowed and issued, if you're able to exclude the competition and secure your own product line, secure
right.
your place in the market, then it's certainly a good investment.
And there can be some value, some strategy in just being having a patent pending, can't there?
There sure can, because it's good for leveraging. It's very effective for leveraging, and it also can be licensed out while it's still pending, because it eventually will probably issue into a patent.
Henry, give us that website again, please.
I'm sorry, the website.
Your website.
The website right now is based on the original book, which is Patent Empowerment for Small Corporations. There's a new website coming through, and that's henryhines.com.
Henryhines.com. That's H-E-I-N-E-S, by the way, folks. Thank you, Henry, for being here. Good job today. Quick break. Right back with Doug Stives, CPA.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.